Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Paul Voss. Good morning, Paul. How are you?
I am outstanding.
We have a lot of guests today, Paul. So one of the things that I realize is that we're going to have to get right into the heart of the conversation, get right into the meat and potatoes of the show. Now, I'm going to take this show back to the beginning. I'm still letting people in and back to the importance of why you and I decided to start this show. When we initially launched it, I met you. You were a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, and you spent the entire show saying, "I love to debate. I love to debate. I love to debate. I just want to debate." And I had to say, "Paul, we're not debating. We are having a conversation." And he was like, "Yeah, but can we debate?" And so then you said, "I want to do this again." And you said there was a cancellation and you came back the next day, spent the next day debating. And then you were excited. So he was like, "We have to do something together." And we launched Face to Face Talk Show. But the reason behind Face to Face Talk Show was that you and I both felt the same as far as change starts with the conversation. And by having these conversations with different people, we can make the world a better place. Or did I imagine that, Paul?
I think you imagined some of it, which is totally fine. I happen to love having the conversations. And often I do like to debate people and I do like to take extreme sides of arguments. I'll listen to you and I'll just pick the farthest opposite of what you're on, because I think that sometimes if we all sit in the middle safely, we don't get to really what you're thinking. So I'll try and sometimes push the envelope a little bit when I'm talking to friends, because I really want to know how you feel. So I'll throw out something that might seem a little absurd, but then it really gets the issues out on the table. Now, I do that with my friends in a safe, friendly environment where I think most of them know I'm pushing the envelope, but it's the only way we really understand people, and get to the heart of the issue. But what I love about this and why I agreed to do it, and by the way, we did not make a decision to do this. You made a decision to do this. And then I, of course, said 100% yes, because I wouldn't say no to you. And I think we have seen through all the episodes that we have had many different guests, lots of different viewpoints, and not one fight. Nobody left wanting to hurt someone or threaten someone or be super mad at someone. So we can talk about issues. And what I like to do is take the noise I hear from people who are afraid to confront the issues, but they'll say it to me. And I could say it out loud to this group and say—
Well, why do you feel they say it to you, Paul?
Because I think people are afraid to have the conversation. I think they have some confirmation bias where they believe what they want to believe because it's circles they live in. And they're afraid to ask someone, "Hey, Raylene, do I call you, you know, or Tony, Celine, do I call you Black or African-American?" So why the hell are you going to whisper that in a bunch of conversations with other white people? Let's talk about it. Right. You know, when they say, they'll whisper, "Look at this. You look at the TV and you see these, you know, young Black kids rioting. What does rioting and looting have to do with slavery?" Well, don't ask me. Let's talk to people, find out where the pain comes from, where the entitlement, where, as I was educated by Lamont and Salim, where whites came over here and rioted and stole land and nobody cared. So, but if you don't ever ask and you just sit with your own kind and whisper in the corner, how do we have a conversation? So I like that I become a catalyst for this, and hopefully I encourage more people to grab people on other sides of issues and say, "Let's talk. Let's not debate. Let's not fight. Let's educate. Let's come in with our hands open," right? Which is why we do handshakes and things like that, to show my hands are open and I want to learn. I don't want to be right. I want to be better.
Oh, that is so powerful. And you know what? It was at the right time. You ended it at the right time, because I wanted to talk to Richard. After last week's show, I felt kind of bad. I felt like Richard made a statement. I shut Richard down and I was like, "I don't want to hear what you're going through, because this is what I'm going through." So I was like, when Richard comes back this week, I got to talk to Richard and go, "You know what? We're all in this together. We have to listen to each other." But I also feel that sometimes there are things that, you know, have to be said. Richard, that was for you. Good morning.
Good morning, Sharifa. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you feel like I shut you down last week?
No, I was just, it's not that you shut me down. I just felt like, you know, there was a lot of thoughts in my mind going through with the conversation. It was, it was rambling through many, many ways. And I'm like, man, are we just talking about one thing or are we talking about a whole? You know, because I'm looking at things as a whole, not just one-sided. And because the issues, those issues are going, they're belonging in many places, you know? So for me, it was, my mind was rambling and I was just kind of just observing. The crowd was hot, the crowd increased, which was good. I was like, wow, I learned from that person, from that person. And now I think at the end of the day, we're all here united. And that's what counts, you know, because we could create influence to the communities out there to that at the end of the day, we're all one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then we have Raylene, who was here with us last week. And Raylene was sharing her experience being an African-American Hispanic female and how she experiences the world. Raylene?
Right. And I really felt you, Richard, for some reason. And I just wanted to be able to kind of just, you know, give some of my experiences coming from a dual background and really having some experiences that oftentimes back in the 70s and the 80s, it wasn't popular. It wasn't the cool thing to be the mixed kid, right? So just going back and just really normalizing some of those limitations culturally that we have because of our upbringing. I mean, and I get to see it in my home, which was a very interesting place because it was our comfort place, but also seeing culturally how mom and dad were very different, mm-hmm. but unified.
Hey, Sharifa, yeah. I want to jump in quickly because I think it's really important because this illustrates an issue we have with conversations all over, especially on social media. We were on a show and Richard said something that, and you felt like you cut him off. You didn't get mad at him. He didn't get mad at you, but then we're able to come back a week later to check on that. And what I want people to understand, especially when we're talking about these tough subjects, race relations, systematic racism, politics, that don't take what somebody says and assume you know everything they meant by it or where their heart was or you hear it and interpret it based on your shoes, your eyes, your set of life experiences. So before you get mad, before you jump behind your grenade wall and lob a grenade back, and then we're in this battle, in a friendly, open manner, say, Richard, I just want to clarify, explain to me what you said. If he said it again, and it's a way I find wrong, or whatever, I could say, can you explain what you mean by that or why you feel that way? As opposed to what we tend to do is we get defensive and then we just get behind our walls and we go, okay, I'm going to lob one back at you. We could do it on a show like this, but in personal conversations, it's very easy to snap and get mad. So, and now I can tell you for the rest of the show, I plan not to talk much because we have so many awesome guests I want to learn from and hear from. So I'm going to barely pop in the show.
So Paul, what you're speaking of is bravery, being brave enough to say, I don't know, being brave enough to say, you know what, help me figure that out. Tell me a little more. And that takes bravery. That takes the moments of being vulnerable to be able to have these conversations. And it's a growing space.
And say, I was wrong. Hey, I have to tell you, I was wrong. I apologize. But on the other side, you have to accept that apology. Drop your own anger and say, okay, he's willing to apologize, but he's wrong. Now let's move forward. Give him some slack. So, you know, that's it. But again, Sharifa, take it away because there's so many great guests and new people that I want to hear from.
Yes, we're going to hear from all of those. Everybody who has a comment, feel free to jump in. That's what we do here at Face-to-Face Talk Show. But I want to go continue this thought right now in this conversation, because to me, it wasn't about being right or being wrong, because there weren't two different perspectives. The statement that Richard made was, we were discussing, you know, changing lives, and Richard kind of made the statement, and Richard, let me know if I'm mention it incorrectly, but he made the statement that anyone can be anything in America. That was the gist of what he said, just a simple statement. And my response was, yeah, I get all of that. Everybody could be, but Black people still need reparations and Black people still need help. And so when I looked at it later, I went, okay, well, maybe I made Richard feel bad by negating his point and what he had to say. And as a host, that's something that I never want to do. I never want any of my guests to walk away from this experience and saying, I didn't get to speak. I didn't get to verbalize what I was saying because Sharifa shut me down. And that's why I wanted to address it and have this conversation here, because so often we don't have these conversations. So that's when why I love to have them here, and guests like Hope and Tony, who have their own radio show, Black Lives Matter radio show, where they focus on helping people have such conversations. Good morning, Tony. Good morning, Hope.
Good morning, Sharifa.
Morning.
It's funny. There's a bunch of things that kind of triggered my brain just based on the conversation that started with you and Richard and Paul and Raylene. And one of the things that Paul made me think about as he was just kind of illustrating his thoughts and laying them out for us is so many people are not skilled in creating a safe environment to have a conversation, right? So just as a really quick example, you know, sometimes my kids will come and they have this great consternation that they are dealing with in their teenage years, and they want to have a conversation about it. And I'll ask them before the conversation even starts, am I listening just to listen because you're venting? Or am I listening to do something? If I'm just listening to you vent, you know, I mean, I can just sit here and look at you and acknowledge you. But there's something to be said for creating that space ahead of time, right? So on one end, as we walk into this environment with these wonderful strangers, soon to be friends, it's wonderful that as we entered the fora, it was like, hey, welcome. We don't get mad here, but we have tough conversation and we ask the tough questions. So now that gives me some comfort, right? I can be myself, I can show up fully, I don't have the code switch, I can, you know, focus in on what the issues are and how I feel about them, and just speak from my platform. So it is such a, now part of my passion in that respect is I'm a coach and a facilitator. So, you know, I live in the world of creating safe spaces for conversation, but I think Paul's point is so valid in this environment we live in today. And I thought it was so appropriate that you kind of opened up with, hey, Richard, let me get back to you. Don't want you to feel like you can't contribute. Don't want you to feel like you got shut down. Here's the thought. So I'm already excited by, you know, all of the opinions that I'm sure to glean from as we move through the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for that, Tony. Hope.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here with you all. Tony and I started this radio show. We started talking about it after the riots began in the spring. I called to check on him. He's in DC. I'm now in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And I said, you know, I want to do something. I own a PR firm and publishing company, and I have a radio network and a popular YouTube channel. And I wanted to give voice to people that don't usually get voice, and no better person to host this show than Tony Farmer, who I've been friends with for a long time and have so much respect for. So we're, you know, I speak for Tony. I think we're thrilled to be here with you all and to hear how this discussion rolls. Sharifa was our eighth guest. We do it every Sunday night at 6 p.m. and we absolutely invite you all to join us as well. It's a one-on-one conversation where you really get to talk about your experience in any way that you want to. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward.
Thank you for that, Hope. Now I want to go over to Salim, because going back to last week's show, we ran out of time, but Salim started a conversation about using the word Black, being called Black. And then everything got adamant. We had 5 minutes left and we were like, we'll finish that conversation next week. Salim, you your thoughts?
So let me say hello to everyone first.
Hello.
I'm not saying it in a way that I'm not trying to dismiss or demean anyone, but what you said this morning reconfirms what I've been saying. We need to have that naked lunch. So when I say that we shouldn't use the word Black, I'm using it from a legal definition and I'm using it from a scientific definition, because therefore we were talking about reparations. Reparations is a legal issue. If you are Black, you are under Black codes. You are 3/5 of a human being, as in Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. So I'm just trying to say that our people, we need to unify under something else than what somebody has given us. Whether it's Spanish with Negro, whether it's French with no R, no matter how you wrap it up, it always comes back Black. If you say you are Moor, Moor is nothing but a word for Black. I'm just saying it as to solidify something that if we want to get reparations, reparations has never been given out to anybody that does not have a nationality. The earliest ones to receive it that we know about in modern history were the Jews from World War II. The latest ones that we knew was in the 80s when Reagan gave it to the Japanese for what happened in Pearl Harbor, also in World War II. What is the thing there? Both of them have nationalities. Black is not a nationality. On no DNA test does it have Blackopia, Negro land, you know, none of that. And it's all misconceptions. So I have a white friend that's born in Cape Town. Is she an African American? Because by definition, she was born in Africa. She's come to America, dual citizenship. She's an African American. So it's the combination of things where we need to have that naked lunch. You don't see Latino people going around calling themselves brown. Well, I'm proud to be brown. They may say it in.
But you do, though. I mean, maybe I imagine it. I mean, I'm in Southern California because it's always been Black and brown, Black and brown. I've heard songs where they sing about brown pride and different things like that. But again, I don't want to make it to where it's a comparison just because this person does it or this the race or this nationality does it. That's why we have to do it.
No, what I'm saying is no one else does it. It's crayon colors. They have nationality. They're Mexican, Honduran, El Salvador, and they have tribes. They have different things around. Africa's a continent. No one says European American or Asian American. I mean, it's about your nationality when we're talking about reparations. I'm not talking about conversations. I'm not talking about the things that we talk to other people, but our people, so-called Black people or whatever we want to call ourselves, we need to get into that legitimate conversation of a national plan of like, how are we going to go about this? Because we also got the underhand of how some of our people act, which is the N-I-G-G-E-R problem that we would have to get rid of. I mean, if we gave reparations out right now, 85% of our people be broke tomorrow. We know that. So it's not just the color, but we need to start having those naked conversations to get people into that awareness, that consciousness, to get to those points that we actually need.
Let's have that naked conversation. Lamont been moving around. I've been seeing him shake his head. He got some thoughts and I'm ready to hear him.
Well, my whole thing is with this color thing, you have to also go back to the very, very beginning of time. Who determines how we are identified? The people in power. Who has always been in power? The white man. We were chosen as slaves because of our Black skin to make us easily identifiable. So therefore, how can you get rid of what has been the main identifier and is the identifier everywhere? The first question you ask when you ask a description, they're gonna give a color. If you don't give a color, you don't know who you're looking for. So I get what you're saying when you're talking about a nationality aspect, but reparations should come about just because it's understood and has always been known that it's necessary. And that is the main reason why things don't happen. It doesn't have necessarily nothing to do with nationality. We haven't gotten reparations because we are the hated person on the planet. We are the property. We were the ownership. We were what was forced to become equal. That's why we haven't gotten it. They're never going to see eye to eye, no matter how you look at it, as long as you got these old Southern belt still believe in the same thing, still want us to be property, part of the 73 million that voted for you know who that thinks that way. That's why it's not going to happen. But you can't get rid of color when you were chosen because of your color. And then your color was deemed derogatory to make you feel bad for the next 400 years to keep you under control.
So will that,
that's my point on it.
Up in court, though. That's all I'm asking. Will that argument stand up in court? Because white people have not been in power since the beginning of time. You got to think.
In this country, they have.
Well, that's this country. So we're talking about reparations. But when you're talking about reparations, you got to also throw in England, France, Germany, Spain. You got to throw in people that had this whole transatlantic slave trade, Ghana, people from all over the place. But that is not anything to hold up in court. And reparations, if we really want to get technical, reparations was already given out. So if anybody has ever read the Emancipation Proclamation and all those things that Lincoln and Sherman and all of them were pushing back, Lincoln also gave $1 million to the homeowners or the slave owners that were in Washington, D.C. Andrew Johnson returned everything back to him. So reparations has already been out there. But what is identified by us, you know, my grandmother used to say this smart thing. Anybody can call you anything. It's what you answer to. So I don't need to answer to Black just because you're saying that I'm Black, because I'm not Black. I'm not the color of SETI. I'm not the color of any of them. But color that has nothing to do with reparations, especially if we know that those people have already put parameters in play that you have to have a nationality. Black is not a nationality. It's just not.
But let's continue. Black can't be a nationality, though? Who says that? Because at this point, we have taken onus as Black people in the United States to be Black. And I'm very proud to be Black. I don't see it as a color. I see it as my nationality. There is nothing wrong with us establishing that nationality, considering many of us don't know the history of where we come from. We can't be Ghanaian American or South African American because we don't know. But that's okay, because at this point, we still have taken onus of who we are as a people and have created our own culture. Our culture is what derives our nationality. You can call it a color all you want to, but at the end of the day, I'm Black. We all Black. Here, and if you don't want to be Black, that's fine too. You can be whatever you want. That's where we are as a society right now. You want to be called something else, be that. But don't fall down on the people who are Black and are fine with being Black.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment you make, because as a Jewish person, you know, you'll hear people say, where are you from? And they ask everybody, or what are you? And people say, I'm Italian, I'm French, I'm Russian, I'm Jewish. And people look at you and go, that's not a country, that's not a nationality. But Jews just have claimed it, that we say we're Jewish. We don't say, I never said to someone, what are you? Well, I'm sort of Polish, German, Russian. We answer as we're Jewish, even though it is not a nationality. That's what we are. And that's how we identify. And it's always that question, but that's not a nationality, but that's how we answer, because in a completely different way than Black people, we were spread out often, moved around often, and Jews don't claim. I've never once said I'm Polish American because my grandparents are from Poland. I say I'm Jewish, or I'm just an American. The difference, I think, between being Jewish and being Black, I think one of the biggest differences is you don't know what I am when you see me. So there isn't preconceived notions, there isn't bias, there isn't hatred until maybe I identify. And then if you're a bigot or an anti-Semite, but I could just be a person, I could just be a white person. But I think that it's an interesting question, because we identify as Jewish, even though that's not a nationality.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'd love to hear from Lanika.
Yes, so I've been sitting here, I have lots to say. My brain's just been going as you guys have been talking, and it's all excellent points. Like, I get what Salim is saying about legal aspects, but at the same sense, like Lamont said, anything can happen. If it's people out here that think that they can identify as a man and they are a woman, born a woman, or you can identify as a they and you one person. You at this damn point, my chihuahua can be a pit bull if she wants to be.
Okay, because all right, hey, I'm sorry, real quick. That wasn't okay. Like, there are so many trans people, they have done nothing to you. Like, seriously, okay,
as a host, what I allow and what I will not allow is people to interrupt when a person is having a thought. She didn't
that
attack trans people.
Transphobic, though.
I don't need to be
on this cast then. Have a good day.
Okay, have a good day. God bless you and good luck. Goodbye. One less. Finish what you were saying, Lanika.
So let's clear this up. I have no issues with nobody being whoever they feel like they are. I encourage and teach people to be who you feel like you are. That's the point of what I was saying. So if you feel like you Black, then you Black. If you feel like you are African-American, you're African-American. I myself, I don't put Sometimes I put black, sometimes I put brown. Because if you look at me, I have brown skin. I'm not black, but I am proud of my black culture. So I get the two blendings of, you know, mixing them together. But who knows where I came from? I don't know if my, I do know I have some ancestors that was born here. I know I got some ancestors that was born some other place else. So, you know, you can't just put a label and say that I am African American just because it's a lot of layers and parts to me, as are, you know, all of you. So I feel like it should be dependent upon the person. And as long as people are open to listening, I think that I agree with Lamont. If something wanted to be done and people wanted to do something, they could, because right when you talk about, you know, the reclamations that was given before, then you insert the Jim Crow laws and all the things that we had to go through that still, yes, anybody can be anything that they want to be in this country. But we as Black, Brown, African American, or whoever you want to be, people who look like us, we have it harder. And I have situations that I have been through that is no other explanation because of what I look like. You can't give me enough that I've been through just because I look like this.
We talk about that all the time. So face-to-face talk show is a platform for us to have honest and open conversations. One of the main ways that we have honest and open conversations is to allow each other the ability to finish their thought without cutting them off. That's what conversations are. Go ahead.
It's not just, again, it's not just cutting people off. It's assuming what they meant by their words. Right. And what the last person who left the show, and I'm really sorry, and if you're still watching, I hope you come back next week. At like, I would have rather seen you say, let Nikita finish, and then say, hey, I want to clarify, can you just clarify something you said, because I'm not sure I understood it right or upset me. But too often in every conversation, we just want to jump and attack. And it turns out that that's not what Lakita meant. Now, if Lakita said, I don't believe in trans men, blah, 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 that's her opinion. Okay, but that's not what she said. But we make assumptions, and words matter. Intonation matters. I might have said something. I think I told you the story about when I thought someone said something to me that was really insulting, but I took a step back and realized it wasn't anti-Semitic at all.
Let's share that, because I know what you're referring to.
So I went coming up from Delaware. I went to a McDonald's with my buddy, and we ordered French fries, and that's all I wanted. And when the woman behind the counter, who happened to be Black, was filling up the French fry thing, I'm like, fill that bag up, fill it up, you know, which I would say anywhere because I want more fries. And she looked at me and she said, are you trying to juice some fries? And now all of a sudden I was like, I was younger, and I'm like, but then I realized quickly, it wasn't anti-Semitic. She doesn't hate Jewish people. She doesn't want to, but it was a word she used. It was ignorant. She didn't know that that was offensive to me. She had heard the statement that that meant cheap or negotiating. And so I took a step back, as opposed to leaping over the counter and wanting to fight and then lambaste that one on Yelp, and ultimately there wasn't Yelp. So I think we have to understand and pause before we react. And then look, there is a time and a place to react. 100%, there is a time and a place. So
yes,
I think absolutely. That what happened was a great illustration of how we can't communicate, because yes. Then we don't communicate.
Yes, and we weren't able to communicate. So I'm like you, Paul. I wish she would have stayed. I wish we would have been able to have this conversation with her. And I hope anyone wasn't offended, because that was not the point of the show, nor the point of that Lanika was making. I love to hear from Tanya.
So quite interesting that she left. I always see that people, you know, their perception is reality. So whatever she perceived at that time was what she felt. And clearly she felt very strongly about it. And that seems to be the moment that we're in right now, right? Everybody is just so stuck in their feelings that they lack the ability to be able to see how someone else perceives the situation. For me, with the Black and the African American, I'm not gonna lie, depending on who's saying it, it sounds incredibly insulting. So when you hear somebody say, am I Black over there? my African American over there, both ways sound terrible to me. So, you know, I don't like
it. I
don't like it. But looking at the messaging, and when we're talking about reparations, the hard part, and this is hard for me to say, is that us as a people, we do not have a united message or mission about anything, and we cannot stay consistent on nothing. That's why it's so easy for them to continuously pass us up on anything that we feel like we are due. Everything is a social media protest, and the minute something else happens, the message just gets shifted again. We have a very hard time staying on message. And this is just as a communications professional, what I've seen. It's really hard. One of the things that I look at other nationalities and how they were able to receive their reparations, they were consistent on what the damage was, how they have been treated, how they have, what they need, what kind of support they need, and that they support each other. We continuously fail on that issue. And it's very, very hard to watch, because I think we can all agree that there has been damage done to us in our culture, but we don't stay on message long enough to move it from A to Z. We get distracted. It's always some distraction to move us from A to Z. It's hard. That's a hard one for me. Real quick, I'll share. I did an interview on my podcast with Mr. Ron Grant. He's with the NFL, retired NFL Association. And he asked me, he stumped me on my show. He said, you know, who is the leader of Asian Americans in America? And I was like, what? And he said, well, who leads Mexican Americans in America? Who's the Mexican leader? And I was like, I don't know. Well, who's the Black leader? Who's the African-American leader? And just all these names started, well, it's what the media will come up with who our leader is. And then that's who they go to decide how they're gonna treat us and what they're gonna give us, because it's so easy for us to be divided. The media and society continues to prey on that. And we have a communications and messaging issue within our own culture. And I think once we get that down and we decide that the results that we're looking for is more important than what they call us or the next social media movement, we will be able to get some results. We can't even agree on defund the police and people that are against it, how we're gonna treat them. If we don't all like one thing, then there's some kind of negativity or you know, bashing on those people instead of recognizing that we are all a culmination of our experiences. And we have not all had the same experience, but we are all African American, and there needs to be some type of resolution for what we have gone through and how we level the playing field in this nation, particularly for us that work really hard all the time and still can't seem to get over that hump based on what we look like. We can all agree on that. But how we get there, we seem to be struggling with.
So Tanya.
No, you know what, Tanya? So
Tanya your has words spoken.
Really, your words really resonate with me, because I work in an environment where we have ethnic groups, right? They call them employee resource groups or special emphasis groups. And when this whole firestorm started back in spring, the African American group had to be heard, right? So my phone started ringing off the hook. I arranged some meetings, both in office and out of the office. And the first meeting that I had, I just allowed space for emotion, right? Just get it out, right? You're angry. The leaders in our organization weren't, you know, having any conversations. Nothing was being said, and so. I was able to broker a meeting with our, you know, the top man in our organization. And so now I have to sit with my African-American cohorts so that we can come up with a message, right? And so to your point, they kept going back to the anger. So I said, okay, I'll make space for that. But at some point, you have to organize your mindset. You have to organize your messaging. You have to organize what you want to communicate if you want a series of things done respective to how you're feeling. if you cannot speak to exactly what the organization head needs to do to create an environment where you feel accepted, where you feel like you belong, where you feel included, then there's nothing for them to do. They can't speak to your experience. Now, the wonderful thing about our organizational head is he said that. He said, I can't imagine. I have no footing. I have no experience. There's nothing that I've ever done in my life that puts me in a mindset to understand where you come from. Great. So here's what you need to do first. Listen, now, on the other side is, what are we going to tell them, right? So it took us a while to get to a point where we were unified minded enough to be able to give some subtle messages. Now, here's the other thing. What does this person have authority to do, right? So it's really kind of tamping down the emotions. We're all going to feel emotional when a thing happens and we see it in the news that impacts our community, right? But is how do you pull that together in a streamable, logistical, often organizational format so that everybody can understand, right? So the people aren't simply scared of the emotion, which is sometimes what shuts down conversation.
Absolutely. I tend to agree. I'd love to hear from Susan.
Well, it's thank you for asking. Everybody, I have enjoyed hearing you speak so far. A lot of you don't know, but I've had people of color in my life pretty much all my life. I lived in the projects at one time. I was the only person that was this color. I've also lived in white communities where there were no people of color. The reason why I'm saying people of color is because of the conversation on the show that's preceded that. I have asked my friends of color, how do you prefer to be spoken to in, you know, do you consider yourself Black or African American? And honestly, they all just really want to be accepted as people because we are people. We don't need a label. We don't need a color. You don't need to tell me I'm white. You don't need to tell me I'm female, right? By looking at me, please don't judge a book by its cover, but you know, you probably wouldn't know my mother was murdered when I was 16 by a Chinese person.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you, right? So then I did live in a community where I was the only white person. I don't walk around saying this. I just go, hi, you know, who are you? What are you about? What do you like? What makes your heart sing? So now that I've said that, let me ask all of you, how does someone of my color, right? You won't know my nationality. You won't know my religion, as Paul alluded to earlier. But let's help educate the people that look like me. What would you like? How would you like us to start seeing you as humans without labels? I feel I already do that, but I don't know how to tell other people to do that from your experiences.
Excellent question, Susan, and I'm going to answer it. And if anybody else, we'll get some answers because I still want to hear from Alexis. But I've said this many times on the show before, is personally, and I can only speak for myself, is that I'm not married to either one. Whether you call me Black, whether you call me African-American, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I understand, and I think that was the point that Lanika was making earlier, is I understand what they mean when they say it in certain ways. So as long as that's not their intention, then I'm fine, because I can feel their heart. I can feel their spirit. And if their spirit and I are okay, then we're fine. Like, I'll give you a real life today scenario. Paul won't let me call him a white guy. When we first started this show, I would try to, you know, then I'm Black and Paul's white. And Paul's like, no, it's just the human race. I'm not a white guy. I'm not a white guy. And I'm like, okay, but I'm just trying to describe us. No,
Sharifa. That's a great impression, by the way. I'm not a white guy. You did an impression of my white guy voice.
You did an impression of me. I was returning the favor.
I love it. No, because I, look, yes, I'm white, but I want to be on the show as just a person. And I understand that it's easy to say. And in a theoretical world, it's great to say, you know, I always find it funny when people say, you know, I don't see color. Let me tell you something. I am not prejudiced. I've got Muslims, Black, white, Asian. I see color. Like, let's stop bullshitting. Like, excuse my French. When I walk in, I see someone who is Black. I don't look at them and go, person. Now, it's different when I see white people, Like, I don't look and go, oh, there's a group of white people. But when I see color, that doesn't mean I see color in a negative way. I'm not saying I see black, ooh, danger, bad. I don't know this person. But yeah, I see color. And you're never gonna train that out of human beings. I think we could be different but equal. And I see women. I see people who are gay. If it's open and they're, you know, they're like, it, you know, I see people who are black and I go, that person's black. Okay, so what? The biggest issue is, what do I do with that when it hits my brain? Nothing, but I see the color. Yes. I can't pretend I don't see color.
Yes, I hear you. I love to hear from Alexa. She's just been so polite and so patient, just sitting there waiting. She hasn't reacted. She hasn't left. Come on, talk to us, Alexis.
Well, I just wanted to hear everybody's opinion, you know, before I spoke. But hi. How you doing? But I think I can go back to what Paul said about, you know, he states that he's Jewish first, and because that's his safety net. That's his ally part of. And I think with us being, you know, quote unquote black, some people are not comfortable in their own skin. So it's hard for them to identify with what they want to be called as. I went to an HBCU, so all I seen was black. So I didn't, of course I see color, but I don't see them as, you know, as I see them as what I see. So I interpret them, like she stated, from, you know, in their character traits. So of course, when I go out into the world, now that I've been around some people that is black, I can do the same thing when I look at someone that is white. I'm gonna look at you as your character traits, not as your skin. So I think with us as a culture, like someone stated, I think that we need to ally within the culture itself. Like all of us are necessarily called black, but all of us are not with the same religion. And I think sometimes with us not being the same religion, it's hard for us to be allies. So we have so many different opinions about what you should believe as a person that it takes us off of the path of what we're trying to get for our people. So as I can say, me, someone right now, I'm getting my master's in public health. When I read all the information in my schoolwork, of course I see race, I don't see color. So I see that African Americans are being discriminated against in disparities within that race. I don't see a color. So I don't know if they're from Africa. I don't know if they were born in Mexico. I don't know if they were born in the American, but I see that there's a disparity in that culture. So I could just, well, thank you so much for at least allowing me to be on here.
Of course, Alexis.
Yes. I love what you said because I think it brings up a really important issue. You can't have reparations without the other side too. If reparations are, we're just going to throw some money at the problem, we'll pay some people for what they did. Okay, maybe it should be done. That's a whole separate conversation, but we also have to correct things going forward. If we give out reparations to those who've been harmed, but at the same time, the workplace, the payroll is different. Access to money is different. The criminal justice system is different. Then we put a Band-Aid on with reparations. So I believe the issue has to be attacked in a two-pronged solution. And I don't know which one's more important. It's
almost, to be honest with you, I don't think reparations is necessarily going to fix everything. It's going to put a Band-Aid on it. It's going to, you know, give us some type of safety net to feel like I'm not going to be hungry and my kids are not going to be hungry, but it's not going to fix the ignorance and the ignorance of what's going on in our society. Like, I feel as though the problem stems from health. If a white person doesn't care about a black person's health, how are we going to care about them in humanity? Then that's the first problem, because in the Constitution, health is not in the Constitution. So that's where it stemmed from. So it's the problem of, we didn't care about health until death occurred. So right now we're only caring about health because a lot of black people are dying. So it's a problem now. So now it's stemmed from a lot of, okay, let's go back into now 400 years ago. Well, 400 years ago, the problem was black people were being discriminated and used as experiments on to figure out what was going on in health. So it all stems from racism. It stems from health. It stems from us not getting the opportunities to get the proper health care and the proper just acknowledgement that something is going on in our culture. And it stems from ignorance of other cultures and of our own people, not acknowledging that there is a problem with our health and us not getting just proper health care. And it saddens me every week doing my homework, having to read and see that how we are being discriminated. So
I hear you, Alexis, but when it, no, oh my God, honey, I want to give you a hug. I'm sending you a virtual hug right now because I see how passionate you are. I see how much this means to you. And I hear you and I hear you. But what I will say is this: health is an aspect. It's a part. It's like so many different problems. That's one aspect of it. But health also became an issue in the African-American and the Black community because we were fed the leftovers, not just the experiments, but there are so many in our diet. So we have to attack this problem for so many different angles, but I just want to give you a hug. Raylene, I see your face, your tears.
Yeah, I was going to say, I really just think it's about exposure too. Like as a professional woman, a mental health therapist, it's about exposure. It's about having people work with us that look like us, having people be in those comfort places. Like for me, you know, starting my brand and really working on my business, Radiant Solutions, and also looking at another brand, you know, and basically building Black families, it really is precedent of what we need. And we need leaders. We need individuals that are going to take the reins. Because we could talk about health. We could talk about mental health. We could talk about these things. But who's the leader? It's about us getting our people to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to change this narrative. If it's one family at a time that I'm touching through Building Blocks of Families, then it's that one family that has to go face a judge. And I can say, you know what? Don't worry about it. I got your back. Your kids aren't going to be taken away. This is what you need to do to get where we need to go. But we don't hold ourselves accountable. We don't hold each other's hand like that. And our counterparts do. Our counterparts oftentimes have the resources to do those things that are needed to be done. We, on the other hand, we have to be able to build each other up to make these things happen. We got to make it happen. We can't ask for it to happen. We got to make it happen.
I want to hear go ahead, Sheffy.
So one big thing that it resonates across all of this is that there seems to want to be one singular process that Black people go through to get what we need. But it's not one singular thing. We can't have one message. There's multiple messages we need to have. We have to address racism in human resources, racism in access to capital, businesses, health, mental health, education. There are so many facets that we need to tackle that we can't have one message. We can't get behind one thing, and we can't expect one organization or one person to start that conversation. We have to have 20 people having 20 conversations, 20 packs running the different things that we need as a community, as a culture, because we're multifaceted as a culture. We have multifaceted issues. There's just not one single issue. Black Lives Matter rallied around police brutality, and that was pretty much it. Police brutality is only a small part of the problem. What about the multitude of other things that actually leads to more crime? The things that education is probably the number one, because that starts with little kids. And if we can socialize our children much sooner to where they need to be in their adult lives, then that makes the whole process harder. But everybody's coming at the end of it. Well, let's look at access to capital with small businesses. Okay, you give them capital, but now they don't know how to run a business. So you can throw money at everything and try to unify one message, but there just isn't one to be had. And I think we have to get out of that mindset if we want to see anything actually progress. We need champions, not just one leader, champions all over different facets to tackle the problem and tackle it with legislation, not just having a rally, not just in the streets marching. We need legislation. And all of that is going to come before we get reparations.
I hear you, which is one of the reasons I'm running for California State Senate. That is important to me. And I want to hear from Richard, because we started this whole entire conversation off 50 minutes ago with Richard and talking, but you are passionate about financial literacy, which is something kind of what Sheffy was talking about with education. Richard, not just for any particular nationality, but just for America in general.
I think that financial literacy is a big issue. It's a big issue because it's not really financial literacy in money, it's financial literacy in identity. So we feel like, well, we could change the narrative, right? Give people resources, give them a voice back, give them support they need, then they could be who they need to be. So that goes back on my conversation from last week. That's, you know, I needed to elaborate it more. Like, it's not, yeah, a lot of people could be what they could be, but the reality is you have to give them an opportunity, an environment, change the narrative for them, and give them the resources. And that's what, like, our organization does. Like, we are very multicultural. I don't see, there's many people of color, but we see all one, because we all have the same common goal. Extraordinary people trying to change the narrative of situations. And Sheffy is right. Well, there's many issues, but we need leaders. That's where it comes down to. We need leaders. As long as we have leaders and we turn them into champions, then we just change the narrative. We change the narrative so the new generations have a better opportunity. So I really think, because I didn't have an opportunity. I didn't have a shot. I couldn't even read. I couldn't even write. I'm Mexican. There's so many things that there's so many blocks too. But you know what? I changed the narrative. I changed the surroundings. I changed the environment. I changed my associations. We had to change. And then somebody believed in me. And it all started because one thing, somebody believed in you. We're not believing into people. We're not pouring into people.
But that's what we're doing here today. We're pouring into people. I want to hear, because I heard Raylene say leaders. I heard Richard say leaders. And then I heard Tanya over here saying, I don't know. So Tanya, I want to hear from you real quick.
Muted.
Just kind of goes back to what I was saying before, is who are the leaders? We don't train leaders either. We don't train people up to be confident enough in themselves and their out of the box thinking, their thought leadership, to be able to really push that forward. And you're right, it is what we need, but we're not doing that. Even when we look at, how we are educated, we aren't educated to be entrepreneurs. We're educated to get a job and then go work for someone else. We all know that ain't how you do it here in America. And most people don't even learn that until later on in life. But we need those leaders early on to start their process of learning what they need to lead us and to think about things differently and listen to younger people who are being innovative on how to get things done. We don't always have the answer just because we're older or we have a title. Right? That's not always the answer. The answer is looking for solutions and a path forward to what the goal is. So having, I've been here long and I've been doing this. I've been in Senate for so many years, so they have to listen to me. That doesn't necessarily mean that's the right answer. So I think we have a problem with following untraditional ways of getting things done. And we are in a time right now where we need to be doing that. We absolutely need to be doing that, Richard, is finding leaders that are action oriented and results driven to follow and collaborate with to get some of these things done. And I absolutely agree with you on that. We just don't do a good job of that. We just think because we're older or we've been here longer or because grandma said or because, you know, my church pastor said, that ain't always the right answer. It's okay to look at new ways to get things done that we really want to get accomplished. So even the health, contemporary health, we have to start looking at new ways on how we look at our health and how we deal with that and mental health. You know, our ancestors look at us like we don't go to therapy. No, actually we need therapy so that we can find answers, move through whatever has me stuck from whatever had me stuck in my childhood that you let happen, so that we can get these new things to happen and we can raise our kids better and continuously raise leaders. So yeah, Richard, I agree with you. I just don't think we've done a good job at that. And we need to continue that conversation so that we can have better health, have better education, more entrepreneurs, more leaders, feeling confident that they can speak up and they can help lead us to next steps, whatever that looks like.
Absolutely. I want to hear from Hope.
I 100% agree with that, Tanya. I think I was asked a question last evening about privilege. So the conversation was privilege. And, you know, somebody asked me, so Tony, given where you've been able to progress to, how do you reach back and help others? And to be honest with you, I'll say to you what I said to her, there's a formula, right? But people are so risk averse, mm-hmm. right? People are so kind of stuck in their way, whether it be traditional or, you know, this safety net, this imagined safety net that, you know, I got a good job, wherever that job is, and I'm gonna stick with it, right? And so part of that leadership training is you got to be able to take risks. You have to be able to take educated, measured risks in your life to take advantage of opportunities that come along that you wouldn't take advantage otherwise because there's a fear of losing what you already have. So I think that's part of the leadership narrative. And I think we have to find a way to make the people coming behind us comfortable enough by the examples that we lay down for them so that they can feel comfortable taking risks.
Absolutely. And we have to help a lot of people along the way. I want to hear from Hope right quick, because Hope, you spend a lot of time, effort, energy, and your own resources to market and get the and spread the word about other people, correct?
So, yeah, you know, when I'm Jewish as well, Paul, and I'm really proud of that. So, you know, so many people have died so that I can proudly say that I'm a Jewish woman. And I feel that a lot of, you know, other people of other minorities have that same experience. It's that internal pride and that gift. And so I just spend a lot of my time and energy allowing people to like feel honored, you know? So I do like to know what a person's background is because it tells me a lot about them really quickly, you know? And from there, then what I'm looking for, regardless of, you know, kind of what your religion or your race or your job is, right? Then I'm looking for a connection so that then we can keep having a conversation. Like I'm looking to bond with people. I don't know that everyone does that. But when Tony and I started this, you know, we have a lot of courageous conversations. I really want, like one of my first conversations is, can you please tell me, because I want to be respectful. Should I say Black? Should I say African-American? Should I say nothing? Like I wanted him to educate me. And when I've had that conversation with some other people, they take offense to it. Well, you should know. I'm like, but how will I know if I can't ask the question? And, you know, and it's so personal, you know? So that's kind of how I feel about this. And I love this conversation. It's so passionate and how everyone gets to come out with who they are, right? Because everything you say tells you everything about what you're thinking, who you are as a person. And to me, the solution is to just keep talking, but also to take action, right? Because we can have all this chatting stuff, which is great. And Tony, I had this courageous conversation actually with Tony last week. I want our interviews to go deeper. Right? Yes, doing is right. Doing is not talking, or talking is not doing. So how do we take these steps? How do we actually work together? You know, Tanya, you're amazing, right? You're so elegant and beautiful and clever and you know it. So how do, like, what do you suggest? And then how can the 12 of us put that into action? How do we bring these kids up? You know, I have a master's.
Before Tanya answers that, I'll answer it this way. We are down to the end of the show, and all of you are amazing guests. That's why the majority of our guests are regular guests that join us every week, because everyone doesn't get a lot of time. But if you would like to come back, please come back next week. Can't make it next week, come back the week after that, but join us for a continuous conversation. You are all invited. I think this was a wonderful show. Amazing. Paul, what are your thoughts today?
Well, I want to you know, wrap up with something that I know a lot of people are going to reply to, but I'm doing it now so you can't. So you have to come out. And it's something Sheppy said, which is interesting because, yes, it isn't one problem. There's lots of different issues that different people need addressed. But here's the one thing I want to throw out there. There needs to be change. We know there's problems in the system that where there's inherent bias. I agree, 100%. I agree that there's things we could do about the past to make up for mistakes we made, complete wrongs, where we could try and figure out reparations. But I also want to tell everybody listening that you also have to take your own responsibility. Now, if you don't have access to money and a computer and a phone, it's one thing. But if you do, I don't want to hear all day long that you don't understand entrepreneurship. Get online and watch videos. Get online and watch TED Talks. Get online and network on LinkedIn and ask questions. Don't just wait for somebody else. Yes, there have been wrongs done and we need to fix things forward. But there's all, you know, I don't want to hear someone who's you know, completely out of shape say, well, I need this, I need this. Okay, go take a walk too. I'm willing to help. But if there, but you show me someone who says, I have no time, give me 24 hours in their life. And I'll show them where they're watching Dancing with the Stars, talking to their friends on Snapchat. You tell me that, no, I spend an hour a day trying to learn. I spend an hour a day trying to this. Then I'm more willing to say, I'm going to give you that extra help. Don't just complain. While we're trying to fix problems, while we're trying to get better, while we're trying to have these awesome conversations, do something on your own. Don't just complain. Don't just want fixes. Start moving the needle.
And I think I hear you, Paul. I hear you, Paul. And I think we're going to have to continue that conversation next week, because when you talk, yep, it sounds good. It sounds wonderful. But what I heard when you talked about the person who wanted to lose weight, who just can't sit there and complain, they should go walk. It sounds great. It sounds wonderful. But when you take that person and you say, this person and their family for the last 400 years, every time they wanted to go walk, someone else came and hit them with a billy club in their knee so they couldn't take that walk. That's a whole different conversation. So I want to have it next week, and we're going to get to it face to face. And I just want to thank you, as always, for being Paul, for being you, for being who you are, for being my co-host, and for being willing to have these conversations. And I can't thank you without thanking everyone, all of you, all 10 of you, even the young lady who left. If you're watching, I thank you for bringing up your point so we can have the conversation, because change starts with the conversation. So once again, I thank you all. I invite you all to return. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live and everyone who is watching it in the archives. I want to make a special mention to Raylene's dad. You are invited to the show. I heard some of your comments, your feedback. You said we need an old guy who's been around, who was in the walks, who walked with everybody. You know what? Don't talk about it. Be about it. Join us on Face-to-Face Talk Show. If you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until next week, 10 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.